Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Cover Up, Collusion in the Halls of Academia, second edition by Elena Hill, PhD, is a story about scientific fraud and one woman's attempt to set the record straight. The fraud was at the New Jersey Medical School in Newark, New Jersey, perpetrated by a postdoctoral fellow and supported by his mentor, who turned a blind eye. Dr. Hill is a graduate of Smith College and received a PhD in biology from Brandeis University in 1964. She was a postdoctoral fellow at Harvard and the University of Colorado Medical Schools. She rose through the ranks from assistant to full professor at medical schools of the University of Colorado, Washington University in St. Louis, Marshall University, Huntington, West Virginia, and the New Jersey Medical School in Newark, New Jersey. Dr. Hill has authored more than 80 scientific publications and was awarded the Smith College Medal in 1997. Dr. Hill retired in December 2016 and is professor emerita at Rutgers, the State University of New Jersey. Dr. Hill has written The Hidden Data, The Blind Eye of Science, and Just Out the Crying Window, Memoir of a Woman Scientist Looking for Truth. That will be published any day now. Check for it on Amazon. We're pleased to welcome to This Week in America, Elena Z. Hill, PhD, author of Cover Up, Collusion in the Halls of Academia. Dr. Hall, a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
So much to
Let me make one correction.
Yes.
Cover Up was actually written by Amy Yarzynski with information that I gave her. So the words in the book are really hers, and she did a wonderful job. I gave her all the notes that I had, and when things started going bad, I started keeping a diary, and it actually I just printed it a while ago. It's about 160 pages, so it's very complete, and really almost covers everything that went on, and she used that heavily to write the book. But she did the writing, and she did a very good job.
Well, she did, and I was going to mention that right off the bat, that this book was as told too, and she is a very talented writer. She's got a number of impressive credentials and did an excellent job in writing this book. Cover Up, Collusion in the Halls of Academia, second edition, book available wherever books are sold. I'll give you Dr. Hill's website as we go through the program. Links on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Let's talk about the motivation to write this book. You were outraged at what you saw. You were outraged at the reaction or the lack of reaction when you came forward with the information. What was the motivation to tell this story?
Well, I believe in truth. I really do. And I think it's really important for scientists to be very truthful. I mean, if you make up data, and I know there are other people that have made up data, and you can mislead people. You can, you know, all of my career, I was in medical schools. And it's very important to get things right, because things are going to be turned over, used on patients and things like that. And you have to be sure that what you're saying is true and has been tested. So I guess that's my motivation. I believe in truth.
And you do that. The message comes clear in all of your books. I just mentioned The Crying Window, which is now available at Amazon. In fact, as we're speaking during the interview here today, Amazon is getting it listed, so you'll be able to find that there, as well as the other books associated with Elena Z. Hill, PhD. Her website, I'll give that to you now, is elenazhill.com. Simple. You can link onto that by going to our website. Another website is hzhill.net. So two of them that you can go to and have all the information there. Talk about the background that you have that qualifies you to write about this. Give me a little bit of the background. What you were doing at the time you noticed this was basically, I don't want to say an illegal activity, but basically was a wrong thing to do.
Well, I was working with the postdoctoral fellow. He was doing one arm of an experiment, and I was doing the other arm. And I was very excited about the experiment. And I came in early. We grow human cells, or actually cells from animals like a Chinese hamster and things like that. We grow them on, in tissue culture, and we grow them and we call them plates or dishes. And you start out with single cells that are spread around the bottom of the dish, and then they grow, they multiply and grow into colonies, which are little round things that you can stain, and then you can count the number of colonies that are on the dish, and that's a measure of how many cells you started with. And this fellow had he was in charge of those colonies, and I came in early and I looked at in the incubator to look at the colonies, and I could not see any colonies on the dishes at all. And I thought, well, you know, I was new at using those dishes and doing those particular experiments. So I thought, well, maybe I'm wrong. I never should have admitted that because that was held against me.
I'm sure
I
it
don't
was.
think I was wrong. But since I expressed some doubt about that, that was not a good idea. I should have just said, oh, for sure, there's no colonies on those dishes.
You know, it's
So
it,
anyway, that was kind of the beginning of the end,
that's how it
which then took
started.
several years.
Yeah, this went on for a long time, going through various stages in as you brought this up. What was his mentor? I mentioned he turned a blind eye. Why did he not catch this or acknowledge it?
You know, I can't explain him, but what I can explain, why do people cheat? Why do people make up data in science? And one of the reasons is that it's very hard to get financial support. The sine qua non is a grant from the National Institutes of Health, and you have to write a very good proposal, with a lot of speculation about the experiments that you're going to do, and so forth, and then you submit it to the national to the particular branch of the National Institutes of Health, and they have committees that meet and decide on who's going to get the money and so forth. And it turns out that maybe in any particular study section it'll be 100, 200 grant applications. And maybe only 10% of them, 15% of them will be funded. And that's a lot of hard work that you go to, and then you don't get funded. So I think, so you try again. And
Yes.
in medical schools, for example, if you don't get good funding from places like the National Institutes of Health, you won't get tenure. If you don't get tenure, you don't have a job. So I think that's a bad system, because it encourages people to when they're desperate, to go ahead and make up data.
And millions of dollars are at stake in this, aren't there?
That's right. I mean, you know, most people don't cheat, but some people are so desperate that they do cheat.
The book we're talking about is Cover Up, Collusion in the Halls of Academia, second edition. The book is as told to Amy Waters-Yarzynski. Our guest is who was doing the talking, the person who witnessed this, Dr. Helena Z. Hill. Her website is helenazhill.com and hzhill.net. Get those straight and we'll give you those. And they're up on our website and you go there and link on and get further information on this. Let's go back to the start of your professional career. And I mentioned the early, when the 50s, you were out in working in science. Few women in science when you started your career. What was it like being one of the few women out there, and how difficult was it for you to establish yourself when it was a man's world at that time?
Well, the crying window takes it from birth
Yes.
to the end, which is probably pretty close because I'm 96 years old. What was it like? There, when I when When I got my first real job at the University of Colorado, it turned out that there were very few women in the medical school, and they were not getting promoted. They were not getting paid very much, and so forth. And I was featured in the on the Denver Post as a woman in science, and as a result of that, I hadn't really paid much attention to the other women, which I probably should have, but I hadn't. And that's when I found out that there were few of them and not getting paid and so forth. So I sent a memo to the dean, and I thought that he and his committee, which was all made up of men, of course, would say, "Oh, we didn't know we were treating the women so badly. We'll do something about that." Well, they did something about that. I was called into my chairman's office the next day, and he said, "You're not going to get tenure, and you have to leave." So that was the beginning of my wonderful scientific career.
Well, you overcame all of that. I want to go back to something you said. 96 years old, you are in great shape mentally, physically for 96. Is there a secret to 96 and being on top of your game as you are now? I mean, it's 96 and you've got a new book that's going to be available on Amazon within the next couple of hours.
I don't eat very much. I think I must have pretty good genes. My father's parents were German immigrants. My mother's family had been in the United States for many generations, and I think because at least I'm somewhat of a hybrid, we call it in genetics, we call it hybrid vigor. But I'm not all that great.
Well,
I got my
96
aches and pains.
and still going strong. And we're talking about Cover Up. This is a book that was written with Amy Waters Yarsinsky. The book is available now on her website and available at Amazon, the usual places. I'll give you that as we go through the conversation today. What problems did you encounter as a woman scientist? We mentioned in the beginning, and you called attention to something, you thought they might correct it, they just got rid of you. That eliminates the problem and you go somewhere else. But how difficult was it to exist as a woman scientist? What other forms of discrimination did you have to face?
Well, anyone in medical education, people who are in medical schools, you really expect we don't have a big teaching load, because we're expected to do research, and to do research you have to have funds, and to get funds you have to write grant applications. And so after I got my PhD at Brandeis University, my first job was as a postdoctoral fellow at the Harvard Medical School. And the first thing that happened was that the fellow that I was going to do the work with wanted me to get a grant from the American Cancer Society. So he sent me down to Yale for an interview, and the doctor that interviewed me was apparently said that I had done a good job and so forth, but he didn't give me the money. And my professor then questioned that, and he was told that I should be home taking care of those four children. Well, maybe I should have been, but it wasn't.
By
We were
choice,
lucky.
yes, you were exercising your right to a career, and it is amazing you did all that, and you had the four children that you raised. I mean, you were doing literally everything around, the job, the house, the children, all of that, and did it so successfully. The story that we're talking about, I'm going to go back to it here in a second, is Cover Up. And you became, when you said this is not right, this is what he's doing is wrong, you became a whistleblower. Talk about that. What caused you to become a whistleblower? And did you even realize at the time when you went public with this or went in-house with it that you would be labeled as a tattler or a whistleblower?
Well, when I observed the first observation that I made, I reported that this fellow, I reported to his boss. I wasn't his boss. I was just working along with him, and his boss just thought he was just the greatest thing since sliced bread, and really didn't believe what I was saying. And also, I like to be really precise, and I wasn't. I was working with a new microscope to look at the dishes, and I wasn't sure that I was doing things right. And so I expressed a small amount of doubt about whether I saw things on the colonies on these dishes or not. That was a big mistake, because people from then on, the committees that interviewed me and so forth, they always kind of held that against me, that I hadn't been sure that there were no colonies on those plates. I know now, I'm sure that there were no colonies, but it just that was probably the beginning of the end.
Did you know that you were a whistleblower? That's a term that's used. It's used a lot now, more than it even was 10, 15 years ago. Did you know that you were a whistleblower, or were you just doing what you thought was the right thing?
Well, I knew that I was doing the right thing, and the whistleblower title was batted around. People did talk about whistleblowers and so forth, and there are whistleblower websites. There are well, as things wore on, and I got deep, more deeply into it, I had to get a lawyer, and I got a wonderful lawyer. He really was so dedicated to my cause. And if I hadn't had him to help me along, things would have been a whole lot different for me.
Why do you
But I
think?
had to be examined. It started out after I had made my report. The university had a committee to examine scientific misconduct, and the committee didn't have anybody that really knew the field that I was in, which is in radiation. So they weren't proper judges. And also, I don't know that this is absolutely true, but I think that the boss of the laboratory, I think that he had personal friendship with the chairman of the committee. And that's just a suspicion of mine, because I
That
don't know
yes.
that that's true, but I thought that it might be.
What?
And I think that's really, now most of the people on the committee were not scientists. That's another thing. They should have been. And they never called in anybody in the field to pass judgment on this.
That's
And they
interesting
should have
because you
done that.
think a scientist would be judged by other scientists when what you're talking about is a scientific endeavor. That's amazing, the story that unfold in the book Cover Up. Why did you persist even after the Office of Research Integrity twice rejected, the Campus Committee for Research Integrity three times, the Federal Court and Court of Appeals all turned you down? Why did you keep going? Did you ever think about,
Cover.
okay, yeah, I mean, at that point, it'd be like, okay, how far do I go with this? And you wrote it out all the way. Talk about that. I mean, you obviously felt that you were right, they're wrong, and you were going to take it as far as you could.
Once I had failed with two seatings of the campus committee on research integrity, failed twice with the National Institutes of Health Office of Research Integrity. Then I just and the woman who was in charge of my case at the NIH, she suggested that I go to court and file a case called a qui tam. And what a qui tam is, that I am a relator in a qui tam, and I'm charging that the government has been defrauded. So let me see, where was I going with this? Once I got into the qui tam, I had to have a lawyer, and I just got the most wonderful lawyer. He was so determined, and very supportive of me and my findings and so forth. And then I had to have expert witnesses, and they were extremely supportive as well. I have two wonderful witnesses. One of them was a statistician, and that's all the statistics and hidden data are as a result of his basically teaching me how to
Interesting.
evaluate the fraudulent data. And the other was a radiation biologist, like in the same field that I'm in, and he was just super excellent as well. So I was really lucky to have these wonderful people that were helping me and that believed in me. None of them ever expressed any doubt that I was wrong.
That
So
amazing.
that was very encouraging.
Well, yes, to have them tell you that you're right and we're going to be with you and we're going to stay with you during this fight. And that went on for like 12 years before the resolution, which was, again, a turndown. Why, and did the
Right.
science community turn against you during this period? And if so, why?
I think people thought I was kind of, what's she doing here?
Oh, yes.
Because by then, I was over 70, and I'm sure that they're wondering, why doesn't she leave? Why doesn't she retire? But
And most people would
I
say,
guess
okay, you,
I'm very stubborn.
well, yeah, okay, we come back to the word severed again. I mean, you're there and you're right and you're going to take it as far as you can. How do you respond to this long history of failure when you go through this? And were there self-doubts that, okay, maybe it is time to hang this up? I mean, this is a long time and a lot of effort and a lot of money that went into this to prove your point. Were there times when you thought, maybe I should just go retire?
No, I
No,
never thought
okay.
that.
There's stubborn again coming in, and you're going to prove a point. The point is on your side, and you're going to prove it. It's an amazing story that unfolds in Cover Up Collusion in the Halls of Academia, second edition, book available wherever books are sold. Dr. Hill's website is hzhill.net, a secondary site, and we'll have that up on our website as well. The book's available wherever books are sold. What are you doing in retirement now? You seem so active. You're a writer. The Crying Window is now coming out. What are you doing in retirement?
Well, I'm writing.
Yes, and a lot, it sounds like.
that takes a lot of time. That really takes a lot of time. Actually, I was lying in bed this morning thinking, because the Crying Window is at the publishers right now and will be out so soon. What am I going to do next? And I thought, well, someone along the line said that in order to keep your book alive, you have to have other additions. And so you've got it right there, hidden data. There are some things that I can add to hidden data now so that I can put out a second edition of that. And so I'll probably start working on that.
And I hope we have a chance to talk about that and the Crying Window, which has to be a, what was it like writing your story, Everything the Crying Window? What was that like going back and looking at your career and what all you've done and the advancements that you helped make for women in science? What was that like going back and reliving all of these experiences?
Well, I grew up during the Second World War, and it was, I mean, we weren't nearly as it wasn't nearly as bad for us as it was for people in Europe, but it was hard. Food was rationed, gasoline was rationed, and my parents had a Cadillac, huge car. It gobbled up gas. And so we couldn't go anywhere because we didn't have enough gas to get anywhere. And then my father, his parents were German, and he wanted very much to get into the war. And so he became an officer in the Navy, an intelligence officer. And he left when I was about 12 years old and spent 2.5 years in Karachi, India. So I didn't really know him, and when he came back, he was ill for a while, and after that, I went away to boarding school. So I never really knew my father, but my mother was She was, it was a very hard life for her, and she was,
Yes.
well, I think I was a big disappointment to her because I wasn't a Philadelphia debutante. I mean, I had to be a debutante, and I just hated every minute of it. I was very shy, and I didn't know how to talk to boys. and so it was not easy, but I had a dog, and I used to talk to the dog.
And sometimes that's your best friend. They're not going to judge you.
Yes,
Sometimes it's
absolutely.
you need to have the dog or a cat that's by your side as you go through this. Looking forward to having a chance to talk about The Crying Window. That's got to be a fascinating story. That will be out very, very soon if it's not out already. Go to Amazon and check that out. Or go to Dr. Hill's website because information will be there, hzhill.net. That's the main website. The name of the book is Cover Up, Collusion in the Halls of Academia, second edition. This story is told to Amy Waters Yarsinsky. She's the author of the book with the all of the story coming from Dr. Hall, our guest on the program. And Hidden Data, the book's out there and will be revised at some point, and we look forward to that as well. Dr. Hill, it's been a pleasure. Time has gone by way too quickly. A pleasure having you on the program. Continued success with all that you're doing. And your diet, it's working. Stick with the diet here. 96 and a clear shot ahead of you, it looks like. So congratulations on everything you've got going. What a career that continues with your writing now. Thank you for joining us on the program.
Oh, thank you so much for listening to me.
It has been a pleasure. And all the information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and Dr. Hill's website, which is hzhill.net. Her other one is elenazhill.com. Between the two, you'll find all the information on her, on the books, and the newest book, Crying Window, that will be out momentarily. You're listening to This Week in America, and we're back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.